Live from the heart of Los Angeles, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright
lights. With tonight's guest, entrepreneur, speaker, and author of Cycles of Life, David Richmond.
Night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Richard Bernard. I am Mark Leger, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
As I was thinking about this show today, I was really gathering this consciousness around the fact that it's such a big topic. And when I look at the fact that cancer is something that pretty much touches everyone on the planet, I would imagine, at least in America and in the Western world. And whether it's something that happens to us or happens around us in our families or circle of friends, it is most likely for everybody always disruptive, always traumatic, most likely for everybody. And not everybody handles cancer in the same way, depending also on what kind it is. But not everybody handles trauma in the same way. And so we have people who come out of the woodwork to help if it's something that happens to somebody, people who want everybody to know about it if they're the ones going through it. Then they're the ones who don't want anybody to know about it and kind of go into isolations. And then there are the people who, when they find out it's happening to someone in their family, then they're out of there and you never hear from them again, kind of thing. And I've watched this happen actually. And it's interesting that there's somebody who has watched this in a way and has put it together in a way, in a concise way, in a book and in storytelling, through public speaking. And he talks about it in Cycles of Lives, 15 People's Stories, 5,000 Miles, and we'll talk about what that means, and a journey through the emotional chaos of cancer. So we'll talk about cancer, we'll talk about trauma, and potentially most importantly, we'll talk about what we could do, whether it's about us or somebody that we know, what we could do to support each other through trauma, potentially better than we have in the past. We can learn something, we can grow from these experiences. And a little later on, we're going to have our Ask Dorothy segment with a very interesting question, relatable to, I'm sure, a lot of people, also probably everybody on the planet. And then we're going to have some special klezmer music, which I don't believe we've had yet on the Life Changes show. So this is special on many accounts. Looking forward to both our guest and our performance guest on the Life Changes show at home edition right after this.
Have you felt inspired to meditate, but you just can't? Do you suffer from anxiety, but fidget toys just make you more fidgety? Want to replace negative self-talk in your head that keeps bringing you down? Introducing the latest self-help solution, Phi Beads. Transformational beaded jewelry inspired by ancient wisdom, science, math, and psychology. All Phi Beads are designed to incorporate the powerful Fibonacci sequence, nature's mathematical formula that has shaped our existence from the beginning of time. The Fibonacci sequence, also known as the golden mean or the golden ratio, is recognized by our conscious and unconscious mind and resonates as order out of chaos, like you see in plants, flowers, seashells, ocean waves, the pyramids, and in our own body. Not only beautiful, they feel good to wear. Phi Beads can help anchor tranquility, positivity, focus, and structure in your life by doing the Phi Meditation. Phi Meditation helps you harness the power of I Am, or intention, affirmation, and manifestation. Affirm the life you want. Get your set of Phi Beads at PhiBeads.com. That's PhiBeads.com.
You are listening to A Conversation That Matters on the Life Changes Show. Broadcasting live from the heart of Los Angeles every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Share the journey with us at LifeChangesShow.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Life Changes Show.
We're back. I am Filippo, and I'm online with our executive producer and co-host, Mark Lejeur.
I was just feeling into how tightly related or correlated those two words are, because chaos is a cancer, and cancer is trauma. And interesting. What a powerful conversation tonight. Really looking forward to it.
Wow, interesting. I like how you see things like that, and thank you. And actually, that's one of the things I'm excited about, because the way our guest has seen things, experienced things, and how he's helping people with these experiences and doing them better. He is an entrepreneur, an author, a public speaker, an athlete, a philanthropist, and author of Cycle of Lives. He's David Richman. Welcome, David, to the Life Changes Show.
Thank you, Filippo, and thank you, Mark. Yeah, that's right. The chaos of cancer, that's definitely, it's emotional chaos is what I'm talking about, but you nailed it right on the head.
Absolutely. And it's interesting. I've been doing the cycles things because it almost seems like this stuff cycles into our life. But you're literally also it's a play on words, cycle as in bike riding. So tell us how this all relates with the book Cycle of Lives.
Sure. So what I thought, Filippo, is like, who doesn't lean in when you say, hey, you know, I got a really good story for you, right? We're all connected by our desire to hear a good story. And we're also connected by the basic human emotions we all have. We might have different emotional responses to things, but they come from the same, you know, set of very, very few, you know, just, you know, very common emotions. And so if we're connected by emotion, we're connected by story. After interviewing the people that are participants in the book for a couple of years, I decided what better way to connect all the stories than to get on my bike and go visit them for the first time. So I took 6 weeks, only about 45 days, to go 4,700 miles, kind of zigzagging my way across the country, and then up, you know, from LA to down Florida and then up to New York, so that I could meet the people I had been talking to for the first time and connect the story. So you're right, it was a little bit of a play on words, but an important one, because I do believe that is, you said it so eloquently in your intro, trauma, cancer can be very isolating, a very lonely place to be. And so what better way to try to connect people than to talk about the emotion behind this chaos?
Well, you have a personal experience, very personal, to leading to the stories and the book,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. I do. You know, I didn't set out to say, ooh, what can I find to go write about? This book, actually, I was kind of called to it as I watched my sister navigate the last couple of years of her journey with terminal brain cancer. And I came across, we had a lot of deep talks. We talked, you know, about a lot of things. We were very fortunate, at least I was very fortunate, in that she was very open to connecting. She didn't have a lot of that trepidation that we normally have. Like you mentioned it in the intro, you know, what do we say? We don't want to say the wrong thing. We don't want to sound like an idiot. We don't want to make it about us. We don't want to bring them down. Sometimes we're just too scared to even talk about these things, so we abandon people. But she didn't do that. But I noticed that people, by and large, most people had some degree of real hesitation about having hard conversations about the emotional side of cancer. And so I said, geez, you know, I was really touched by that, with what my sister went through, and I saw the doctors and patients and friends and loved ones and other survivors. You know, they could talk about almost anything, guys, but when it came to the emotional side of it, that's when everybody went quiet, eyes to the ground, and kind of, you know, found themselves a dark corner to hide in.
You know, I'm thinking while you were sharing this, that we have lots of example of quote unquote friends, and that's not to say that a lot of the examples out there are good examples, but we see friendships on TV and in movies, but we don't see these kinds of friendship experiences for very long that I'm aware of, where we could actually learn or even process while watching or experiencing, which comes to think of it, this is what you're doing with us and for us and for everybody in the book.
Yeah, and that's what I was trying to do. I'm not trying to prescribe answers or preach to people, tell them what to do. What I'm trying to do is allow the reader, as I was fortunate to do in my discussions with the book participants, is allow the reader a deeper understanding, because oftentimes while we're navigating something difficult, it's not necessarily the topic or the issue or the difficulty that we're handling at the time. It could be residual trauma, emotional scarring from other issues, you know, for example, maybe abandonment or abuse or, you know, drug addiction or something. I mean, who can't relate to the idea of if you had experienced very real abandonment in your young adulthood or even in your adolescence, and then it came to you're trying to navigate something very, very difficult on an emotional level, such as maybe cancer or something. Mm. And your friends say, you know, geez, Filippo, how are you doing? Well, being that you're carrying around the trauma of abandonment, you don't want to let them in. You're like, okay, I'm fine, because you're afraid if I tell them, they're going to go running for the hills.
Or the worst
if I tell them, they're not going to care. Yeah. And so exactly. And so what I was trying to do with each one of these stories is to really delve deeply into if when you encounter cancer was A, point A, how do you navigate the emotional side A to B, B being today, in relation to all the traumas that happened before A? And I wanted to give the insight into all of that, so that when we encounter, because who's not going to if they haven't already multiple times, encounter somebody going through something really difficult, maybe this can empower us with a few extra tools, a little more gusto in our ability to authentically connect to the people in our lives.
You know, I've experienced people who have had illnesses or trauma in their life who have gone through the process and had it serve them in ways that a lot of people don't expect. And it's nice to know that is possible. So you go through that in the book as well, right?
Oh, most definitely. And look, I'm not saying I'm some kind of master communicator about all things trauma, but what I have learned is kind of the thought process behind and the real, you know, the details behind the thought of you never know what people are going through, what they have gone through. And seeing that so many different ways in such depth as in the people that I exposed in the book really gives you a deep understanding and a real sense of, a sense of awe behind the idea that you never do know what people have gone through, what they're going through. And that does give you, in my case, I believe, a little bit more empowerment to maybe be uncomfortable yourself and start hard conversations, because it's what we all need. We all crave that connectivity and that authentic, you know, you care about me, I care about you. We're here for each other. We're listening to each other. We care, which is really, it's just not very common. It certainly isn't easy. And so yeah, that's exactly what we did.
If we don't have good examples of that, and if we haven't done that, or if it's not in our nature, or we've not practiced it, then it certainly could be something very hard to start, especially in the middle of something traumatic like what we're talking about. You yourself, actually, you had to have this kind of conversation with yourself to get you through your own personal traumas into becoming a completely different person. So let's talk about your process.
Yeah, I did. I was fortunate to be able to do that, right? Because some people, they just become who they become, and then that's it. That's the end point. And for me, Filippo, I got to a point in my life where I was as a very down place. I was overweight. I was a smoker. I was not healthy. I was, you know, not active, stressed out about life, probably made a lot of bad decisions. I'm probably stuck with those bad decisions sometimes a little too often. And I just didn't like who I was and what I was going through. And through a number of different things that kind of happened in a very short period of time, I just took the step, Filippo, to go, okay, like, who are you and who do you want to be? And I didn't do it like in a imaginary way. I actually stood in front of the mirror in the bathroom and I looked at myself and I asked myself over and over and over, like, who are you? Like what's important to you? What have you become? Who do you want to be? And I didn't turn away until I answered the questions, and I didn't like a lot of the stuff. I liked some of it. And I said, so back to what's in my process, my process was kind of three-step. One is forced myself to take a very honest, deep, revealing look at myself. I'll hold back no punches and be honest with myself. The second thing was to just say, okay, listen, David, the bad things, just let it go. Just forgive yourself. Just let it go. Maybe you made bad decisions in the past or whatever, change it. Just let it go. Just start from today forward. And that brought me to the third part, which is how I've lived my life, I believe, since, which is just leaning into every experience as a learning experience, and deciding that I didn't know everything about life and about myself and who I could be, but I wanted to go and find out. And I did that through endurance athletics and through, kind of believing in myself to challenge myself in new ways. And so that led to, for me, a whole lot of life changes.
It reminds me of the quote that I said I was going to look up after I spoke with you about an unexamined life. Still don't know who said it, but the point is that an unexamined life is not worth living, or something like that. And it sounds like you started to examine your life and your life became more worth living. And you're also gone on to support a lot of people. Now, this doesn't mean that the examination and going through those simple steps that you mentioned is easy at all. I love the example that you gave me about when you started, was it your first bike ride?
I did a 87 mile rollerblade race.
Rollerblade. Yes.
And through the gentle rolling hills of Georgia, which are anything but gentle, Filippo, especially in the late summer and all that humidity. And when you're not an athlete, trying to do 87 miles on rollerblades was a little over my head.
So you are an athlete now, but you weren't then. This was you just getting started?
This was me just getting started and having no idea what my limits were or what I would find out about myself. I think I was alternately at a place where I felt like I knew everything about me and where I wanted to learn. So I was navigating that little gray area. And when I got to this race, I was kind of totally intimidated. I didn't belong there. Everybody was an athlete, but I'm going to do it anyway. And about 30 miles into the 87 miles, I was done. I hit the wall. I was done. I couldn't move. I was out of breath. I was depleted of all my energy. I was dehydrated and I was just done. And I'm leaning over on my knees, Filippo, and I'm just sweating all over the asphalt. And I'm just like, man, you're just done. Like, you're done. And then this little voice in my head said, well, you've got two options. You could just say you're done and know everything there is to know about yourself and just go home. And there you go. You found your limits. That's okay. No big deal. You know everything. Or you could just go like a little bit further and figure out how to take one more step and then one more and then one more, not to accomplish it, but just to learn. Like what can you learn from pushing yourself? What can you learn from reaching higher? What can you learn from being uncomfortable? So I changed my mindset into saying, wow, I want to learn. What are my limits? What am I capable of? That day, by taking that one step approach, I was able to go about another 6 hours and make it to the finish line, barely, but I made it to the finish line. And then I was like, whoa, I mean, man, I learned I set my goals way too low. I learned I was ready to quit before I was. I learned I didn't prepare properly. I mean, all of these things I could learn. And then that became a real draw for me to say, man, why don't you lean into learning and see what you're capable of? And that was a real big, it was a real big mindset change for me.
And certainly wondering what's on the other side of that uncomfortable moment. What about the uncomfortable conversation? So for people that are experiencing cancer or some kind of trauma, there may be things that they could do to support them in being their best self in that moment or through that experience or hopefully on the other side of that experience. How would it have been welcome if somebody, or maybe somebody did, actually, maybe there's a story there, said to you, okay, look at you. Right. Are you who you want to be? Look at you on the couch, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. And that's the point of this book, right? Is I think through these stories, we can just sit there and go, you know what, maybe it's better to not, you know, stiff arm, keep our distance because we don't know what to say and we don't want to say the wrong thing. And I mean, how many times have you had a friend, any listener has had a friend that's gone through something really, really difficult. And the longer you go without reaching out, the easier it is to not reach out because right. You just boom. And then there you go. And then you wonder, geez, you know, that was my best friend at one point. And now they've disappeared for years. Why? Because it's really, really hard. And I don't think anything can come bad if you're coming from a decent, connective, like altruistic spot. Like you really want to help somebody, or even if helping is just listening, or you want to just ask them how they're doing and you want to listen. If you want to just be a sounding board for people during their difficult times, you're never, ever going to walk away thinking that you shouldn't have done that. Now, if you don't talk to them, right, if you don't have the hard conversations, if you don't have these honest, you know, connecting things with yourself or with other people, yeah, you can regret that forever, for sure. So for me, I really, even though sometimes the conversations with myself or with people close to me or even strangers are uncomfortable to have, you have to have them because that's the impetus for connectivity. It's the impetus for change.
So for you, you had the conversation with yourself. Did anybody have the conversation with you? The story, the friend's story, yeah. I liked, and maybe we can get into that too. But did somebody say something, or was it always you?
It was a lot of people.
Really?
Well, you only hear what you hear when you hear it, right?
Right.
I mean, how many times has somebody said, I've told you that, Filippo, like 100 times.
Right.
Yeah. How come it took you 100 times to hear me? Well, because you only hear what you hear when you hear it, right? Wow, and so how many times did somebody tell me to quit smoking? How many times did I tell myself to quit smoking? How many times did I feel like I should be healthier or start being active or lose weight or what? You just don't hear it, you know, whatever, right? And through a number of different things that have happened, kind of the conversation that was the hammer to the head for me was one where I was talking to a friend of mine. He had heard for years me complaining about the situation I was in and the people that were in my life that were stressing me out. It was just a horrible time for me. And you know, it was really, really dark. And he at one point just looked at me and he goes, look, dude, he goes, like everything in your life is a dog. It's a rabid dog. That's what you seem to go looking for. And then you have a conversation with a rabid dog and it yells at you and you pull back and you're like, what the heck? And then you try to pet it and it bites you. And then you're like, what the heck? He goes, why don't you look in the mirror and figure out why you're always trying to find rabid dogs to fix? Like, why don't you look at yourself, like solve your problems instead of trying to fix other people? And I was like, what?
Yeah, get out of my house.
It's not me. It's them. It's always them. And wow. You know, right? But he was right. It's like, man, like you know what? When you're talking to somebody and they go, Yeah, my last boyfriend was such a jerk. And you go, oh, I'm really sorry. Yeah, and the boyfriend before that was such a jerk. Mm. Yeah, in fact, the last seven boyfriends I had were jerks. Well, maybe I think it might be you, right? Like, okay, what is causing you to attract jerks? Forget about them. What about you? Mm. Right. And so I was at the point where I never had really looked in the mirror and said, dude, what's your issues? Like, why don't you try to fix those?
Hmm. Mm. Yeah. Good on you. Good on you. And this, everything we're talking about, really, it, like you just mentioned, relationships. We're talking cancer. Now all of a sudden we're talking relationships, relationship with ourselves even. It's across the board. It's cancer or loss of career or job, loss of friendship, loss of somebody in the family. It's anything. Mm-hmm. It's trauma.
Yeah, and beyond that, Felipe, it's more than that. It's people that are going through difficult times with mental issues or eating yes. disorders, or how about somebody who lost a job or had to end a career that they really loved? Or yes. there's a lot of places for trauma. And one of the stories in the book that's the most touching to me is about a woman who never even had cancer. She's just afraid of cancer, and how debilitating oh. even the fear of cancer can be. When you learn why she is so afraid of cancer, you really, really identify with that person. And so, you know how sometimes you think, Filippo, like you look at somebody and you go, oh my God, like how in the world can they handle what they're going through? There's no way I could ever do that. Mm. Right? How many times you said that about somebody? And I guarantee you, most of the time that person is looking at you going, oh my God, man, what Filippo has to deal with, there's no way I could ever do that, because we're living our lives. But we don't think it's anything special, but certainly I've never met anyone who doesn't have some kind of some box overflowing with leftover trauma, primary, secondary, or otherwise. And we carry that trauma around with us, and it affects the way that we deal with things on an emotional level. It affects the way that we connect with people later in life during difficult times. And if we can understand that a little bit more, maybe it can empower us to kind of get past that so that we can form more meaningful relationships with the people that matter to us.
Mm. And it starts with the meaningful relationship that we form with ourselves.
Absolutely. Know what your limitations are. Know what your boundaries. I mean, I really have nothing in common, Filippo, with the person that says, you know, oh, that's the way I am because that's the way I am. Or, oh, I've always been that way, so that's the way it is. I don't understand that, because I'm like if I could use a really stupid analogy, I'm the guy driving where I'm looking ahead to see what's ahead of the road. I'm not looking in the rearview mirror. Right. And so you rarely find me stuck in a sentence of or a mindset of this is the way it is because this is the way it's always been. Like, I just don't believe that. And those are limiters that in my opinion, limit us from becoming our best selves. And how we become our best selves is to make an honest assessment, right? Let it go that we didn't get to where we're at, forgive ourselves for what, just free our minds a little bit, and then just go after it, lean into it and change and learn and adapt and transform and take the moment to become our best selves. And so it starts with you. And of course,
well, I'm sure people are getting the hint, if they haven't already, that the conversation is about pretty much life, and that there is trauma in life, and learning how to mitigate it or how others have dealt with it, we can potentially say, oh, this, I could do it, I could use this, or I could share this with somebody that who could use this. And the more we have these conversations, the more it becomes less uncomfortable to have these conversations, and we can support ourselves and each other better. And so when we come back, actually, David, it'd be really great if you could give us a couple tips on mitigating trauma, since you've learned so much, whether it's from the book or not. Again, the book is Cycle of Lives. Mm-hmm. And it's available at cycleoflives.org, and 100% of the net proceeds from the book are donated to the cancer focused charities as chosen by the book participants. What a Beautiful Thing, by author David Richman. We're talking to David right now, and we'll be back with a little bit more, David, when we come back. We'll also have our Ask Dorothy segment coming up. And after that, our performance guest, Richard Bernard, is bringing klezmer music to the Life Changes show, as he has actually throughout the world. And we'll talk about that all on the Life Changes show at Home Edition right after this.
The Little Dog That Could is the fantastically true story of a man and a little dog that came into his life as his mentor to help him understand the world beyond his human senses and to experience life, love, and healing beyond his human understanding. Best-selling author Filippo Voltaggio, who currently hosts the highly regarded Life Changes show, is an internationally known singer, speaker, and life coach. Filippo offers up his own story, how one little surprise package in fur and four legs transformed his life unexpectedly forever and furthered his path of self-discovery. In The Little Dog That Could, Filippo brings to life the meaning of the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Through the reading of this book, you will experience the journey of real miracles that transcend time, space, and logic while gaining practical tools that will help you navigate your way. The Little Dog That Could is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For more information, visit thelittledogthatcould.com. That's thelittledogthatcould.com.
You are listening to A Conversation That Matters on The Life Changes Show, broadcasting live from the heart of Los Angeles every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Share the journey with us at lifechangesshow.com. And follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Life Changes Show.
We're back. This is our episode 701, and we've titled it Insight into the Human Experience in Dealing with Trauma. And so now we're going to get right into it, dealing with trauma, with our guest, entrepreneur, author, public speaker, athlete, philanthropist, and author of Cycle of Lives, David Richman. David, I've been enjoying the conversation.
Oh, me too. Thank you, Filippo. And yeah.
Thank you. No, you were about to say something very nice. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, obviously these are important topics, because who doesn't know somebody, if it's not us, right, who's going through something traumatic? And I think the more we are open to talking about it, the more we allow ourselves to talk about it, the better.
And so what I was eager to say, and I cut in, but thank you for saying that, is along those lines, the more we talk about it, what I trust, the easier it'll get, especially when people hear this kind of conversation. And I have to say that we can't, and hopefully there's hopefully no way that we will ever experience every situation possible. And therefore, we won't always know, as almost we may never know the right things to say. And so the conversation is a two-way street. So on the one hand, if we're going through some kind of trauma and somebody says something to us, unless they're purposefully trying to be mean, then we need to understand that they don't know what to say, as we don't know what to say all the time in situations of trauma, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I have really learned to change my thinking of, I don't know what to say, to, I just need to listen. I don't need to say anything. And I've learned from the participants in the book that saying you're sorry is not the right thing, because it's not your fault. So don't say you're sorry. Trying to compare or is not fair, because I lost a finger, you lost a leg. Which one's worse? We can't compare them. Right. Don't try to fix it. Don't say anything that's going to make it better, because you can't make it better. Sometimes it's really not fixable. It's not, you can't make it better. And I'm not coming to you to have you make it better. So these are some of the things that I've learned.
David, does that include it's going to be okay?
I think, unless you know that it's going to be okay, I don't know that that's helpful.
Yeah.
I think what's more important to know is that whether it's okay, whether it is okay or it's not okay, Filippo, I'm here, and I'm here in a really, really authentic way. And if you tell me that you need me not to be here today because you're not up for it, or you are afraid to tell me that you need me there today, both ways are perfect. And just reach out, or allow me to reach out. And you can always shut me down, or you can always grab me in. But you know, so I think it's really trying to connect with people in just a way of just being there, whether it's listening, sitting there next to them and not talking or whatever, because we don't know that it's not always going to be okay. And it certainly isn't up to us to make it okay.
You just said a lot. I just, if there's more, lay it on us. This is so, this is so good, David.
Well, I, again, these aren't things that I know. These are things that the people that went through these things know, right? And what I learned from them, because who can't know when somebody says something bad, you go, oh, and you say, oh, and you give them these little puppy dog eyes and you're like, oh, I'm so sorry. What can I do to make it better? What do you need? It's like, all of those were all the wrong things to do. People don't want your sympathy. They don't want you to tell you it's okay. They don't want you to understand what's going on. They don't want you to compare it, right? They just want you to listen. And so I've really gotten into the habit of trying to ask questions that allow people a safe place to talk, rather than to offer a statement that gives me a safe place to exit. Oh. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. So that's my, I hate to be preachy and prescriptive, but that would be as far as I can go is be there to listen and not to talk.
David, we have a couple of minutes before the end of our time together. Could you share quickly a story from the book that you think would be poignant for us at this moment?
Yeah, if anybody's listening, thank you for that. If anyone's listening, this is a book exploring the emotional aspects of trauma, cancer, and childhood and young adult traumas. But it is also a very inspiring, uplifting, optimistic, forward, you know, looking a glimpse about the human spirit, because every one of the stories has a positive, optimistic spin to it, even if there's tragedy involved. An example is I like to pick on Bobby. He was the first story in the book, and Bobby was this angry guy, you know, never could get past himself and his own limitations. It certainly affected every relationship he ever had. And by chance, he gets to meet Brandy, who, as he put it, immediately put a new pair of glasses on him. He saw the world in a totally different way. And they had this beautiful love affair that was developed during her time in the chemo chair, because she got breast cancer shortly after they met. And they end up falling in love. Right before they get married, her cancer comes back. They get married. She goes through treatment. And within a year or so, the cancer metastasizes, and it takes her, and she's gone. And you wonder, like, what in the world? This poor guy had finally put on a new pair of glasses and could see the world in such a wonderful place, and that person's gone. But right before she died, they talked about everything, Filippo, everything from A to Z, including how he had to go to therapy after she passed away, and how she said to him, look, you're your best self now. I'm not going to be somebody that's going to be around to enjoy it, but somebody else will be. And you got to be your best self. Like, go live your life, be happy, go whatever. And he's met someone. They do an event every year in Brandy's honor. I think they're married close to 15 years now. And I asked him, I said, Bobby, like, what's your secret? And he goes, look, man, if Brandy didn't die, I would be happily married to her. I probably couldn't be any happier. We'd have kids. It'd be the greatest life ever. But that didn't happen. He goes, but she helped make me the best person I could be. And that's what I am with the person in my life now. And I'm living my best life. I wouldn't change it for a thing. And it's like, wow, man, I would love to learn. And I did learn. How do you move on from losing the love of your life to finding the love of your life and being at peace with it? How wonderful is that? So each story kind of has that kind of a story to tell about how people overcome the traumas in their life, how they navigate the emotional issues that we all have to deal with. And hopefully, not always, but hopefully come back, you know, on the other side a little bit better.
Mm. Thank you for that story, David. Mm-hmm. That's from Cycle of Lives. And our guest is David Richman. You could buy the book where books are sold. You find it also at cycleoflives.org. You can find David also on Facebook at Cycle of Lives and on Instagram as well. We have all the links for him on our webpage for David Richman. David, you've enriched us today. Thank you so much for your sharing.
Well, thanks for having me on. And, you know, I love getting all animated and excited to answer good questions. And so thank you for for listening and giving me a space to share my thoughts as well. I really appreciate it.
And the pleasure has been mine and ours. And thank you for what you do. And I look forward to getting to know more. I'm sure there'll be more books as you learn more and interview more people. All the best to you, David.
Thank you. And I'll see you on episode like 901 or 1201 or something like that when we talk again.
Very nice. Very nice. David Richman, cycleoflives.org. Thank you again. And with that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Robert from Los Angeles. I have a very demanding job and travel out of state for the most part for extended lengths of time. I'm currently on a 4-month assignment and I don't get to see my mother very often. She lives 3 hours away from my sister, and when I am able to visit our mom, my sister gets very upset if I don't go see her too. I was recently able to break away for a visit to mom on a 4-day holiday weekend. When my sister called me to see if I was coming to see her during the holiday, I told her a white lie saying that I had to work and wouldn't be traveling because if I told her the truth, she would be very upset with me, and when she gets upset, it's not good for her or for anyone. I don't like to lie to her or anyone, and yet I feel it's in everyone's highest and best good to do so in this situation. Am I wrong?
Dear Robert, I do my best to speak truth, as I firmly believe that truth will set us free. However, I do believe that in some cases, a little white lie can be the kindest thing to do. Susan Dizes White, PhD, says this in a Psychology Today article. If you're trying to spare others harm or pain, that's considered pro-social lying and is often a sign that you've got a well-developed sense of empathy and can choose to act compassionately towards others. I agree with her, and I also see that the major difference between a hard lie and a white lie is that a hard lie is about protecting oneself, and that sometimes a white lie is said to protect someone else. And it appears that you are wanting to protect both yourself and your sister from trauma and drama. If your relationship with your sister is as tricky and complex as I intuit it to be, then you might be making the correct choice here. However, I urge you to focus and find ways in the future to always speak your truth, as I truly believe that the truth indeed sets us free.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at AskDorothy@LifeChangesShow.com.
And we'll be back with our performance guest, Richard Bernard, here on the Life Changes Show at Home Edition right after this.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
Thank you.
The Life Changes Show is a talk, music, and variety show presented by Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor and celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people, celebrities, business leaders, and children, we are here to inspire our audience to do life better. With heart, integrity, and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your lives through the Life Changes Show. As your life changes, we're here for you. Share the journey with us at lifechangesshow.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Life Changes Show.
And we're back. I am Filippo. This is the Life Changes Show at Home Edition. Our performance guest is a band leader and multi-instrumentalist, Richard Bernard. Welcome, Richard, to the Life Changes Show.
Thank you, Filippo.
Richard, it's been a long time coming. You reminded me when I reached out to you. You reached out to me on Facebook and connected, and you looked familiar, sounded familiar, but I called you and I said, hello, this is Filippo with the Life Changes Show. And you said, yeah, I know you. And our dear friend who passed away just a year ago, God rest his soul, Terry Kano, introduced us, and we performed on each other's bands.
Yeah, I believe we did. Yeah, doing some Neapolitan street music, if I recall.
Yes, 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 and you did it very well, and even more congratulations. Now I'm even more impressed knowing that it was a completely different culture to you. You grew up bringing klezmer music to the world at a very young age, and who brought it to you?
Well, my grandfather was from Chișinău, Moldova, and grandmother from Iași in Romania, and my dad was born in Paris, their son Frenchy, as he was known in America. So I grew up in a polyglot, born in Brooklyn, kind of a milieu with the Italians from my mother's side, and all the Jews that were from so many different cultures, from Ukraine to Moldova to Romania on the other side. And of course, in New York, you're surrounded by Italians and Germans and black community and people from Puerto Rico. And from there, what happened as being raised Jewish in New York, we moved when I was age 10 to kind of to the middle of the rural South, Northwest Georgia, the place that's underwater today.
Wow.
Due to the floods. And I guess I had a reaction from seeing such a binary area where there were all these cultures that surrounded me in New York, and none of them were present there. So I guess that's why I retreated into my culture, and to keep an identity for myself among these people I couldn't relate to. Everything was, you were either black or white, or you were either Southern or Yankee. And there were no Jews to speak of around there. And it was more of a danger being a Yankee at the time than it was being a Jew, because they knew damn well that Sherman had burned their county as practice to burning Atlanta. They knew what a Yankee was, but a Jew, they didn't know. They wanted to, you know, feel your horns if they figured it out. But by and large, it was Now that's a literal thing. That's not an old wives' tale or an urban myth. People do ask if they can feel your horns.
Wow.
Lovely.
And maybe from all of that experience, as you said, you went into your music.
Into my cultures, yeah.
Into your culture, and now you've shared your culture and your music with the world. On Facebook, I called you the King of Klezmer, and I'll tell you.
Okay, thank you.
I'll tell you why.
I guess it beats being the King of Beers.
I'll tell you why. Because you've been in movies, like blockbuster movies, and you've been in commercials where millions of people have heard klezmer music or seen you performing it. So the music has gone out to millions from you. And how do you relate to klezmer music now after all these years, and how you keep putting it out?
Well, when the characters like myself, starting around the 1970s, got interested in their roots music from their cultures and started having a renaissance in klezmer music, it was a unique thing, and it was very different. People didn't know what it was, and there's only, if you're going to be an artist, the only way to be a true artist is to pass on the tradition. So we were kind of diplomats or ambassadors for this type of music, and nowadays, there's klezmer camps. I mean that in a good way, not like a concentration type of a camp. But I mean, there's you know, you go away for the summer and you take workshops, that kind of a camp. And all kinds of young people now are playing klezmer music. So I feel like we've done our job from bringing back a music that was unheard of. People didn't even use the term klezmer. It would just be whatever, Jewish music or Hasidic music or Hava Nagila. People don't, you know, that was right. The only song they knew. So now people are doing it all over the world, literally all over the world, of course, in Europe, but also in Asia and just everywhere, probably someplace out in outer space right now. So in that sense, I think we've done a good job. All the people who were first started reviving it in the 70s, you know, we've done a decent job of bringing it, making it an alive culture in the 21st century as well.
Well, good on you. And so I obviously, we all, most of us probably know you that are listening to the show. And I knew you before I knew you because I used to enjoy watching the Barbara Mandrell show.
Oh, my
and
God.
So I'm dating myself a little bit there, but that's a lot of fun. Good on you. So let's hear, what's the first thing we're going to hear? You're going to perform live for us, right?
And, yeah.
And what are you
going
to play? What instrument? What instrument?
Martin. This is Martin. Say hello, Martin. That's Martin. He's my 12-string guitar. He or she or they.
Okay.
My 12-string guitar and my voice. My voice is a little scratchy. I accidentally drank some Barkeeper's Friend. I thought it was a beverage, and it wasn't. I don't know why I keep making that mistake, but yeah, I'm going to sing a song about Odessa, which is under siege from Russia right now. It's a city that was actually founded by an Italian. You might be happy to know, Filippo.
Interesting.
Yeah, his name was Jose de Ribas, and he was half Irish and half Spanish, but he was working for the Navy of Naples. He was in the Napoli Navy under Catherine II. He was working for Catherine II of Russia. They founded the city of Odessa, which quickly became a center for all kinds of regional ethnic groups, but particularly the Jews. At one point, they had a third of the population, but after the pogroms and the Nazis and their Romanian cohorts, there's not very many Jews left there now. So Odessa, a place where they would have like a roaring 20s glamorous gangster kind of scene there that became very storied and legendary. So a song for Odessa that looks back in with nostalgia in a happy way, how we used to party in the old days in Odessa. But that song is going to be preceded by a song I will sing in Yiddish and then sing it in English as well. So you're going to have an instant translation there. Wie ist das Gesele? And in Odessa. Wie ist das Gesele? Wie ist die Stieb? Wie ist das Mädele? Wem in ich oblieb? Ort ist das Gesele? Ort ist die Stieb? Ort ist das Mädele, wem in ich oblieb. Ort ist das Gesele, Ort ist die Stieb. Ort ist das Mädele, wem in ich oblieb. La la la, la la la. La la la, la 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 la, la la. La la la. La la la, la la la, la. Where is village, the place of my youth? Where is the girl who kissed me with the truth? Where are the young hearts that sang unafraid? Where are the visions? Where have they strayed? Where are the young hearts that sang unafraid? Where are the visions? Where have they strayed? La la la, la la la, la la la, la 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 la, 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 la la la. In Odessa, if they mold a vanka, if ho get tans to Polonaise, mit the charlatanka. In Odessa, if they mold a vanka, if ho get tans to Polonaise, mit the charlatanka. Yo, 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 zizi metal. Lo me baden fillin' in Odessa. Yo, 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 shane metal. Lo me baden fillin' in Odessa. Hey, 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 die, you could die, fillin' in Odessa. Hey, I die, you could die, you could die, you could die, die. Yeah, I die, you could die, fillin' in Odessa. In Odessa, in Odessa, if they mold the vanka, if ho get tans to Polonaise, mit the charlatanka. In Odessa, if they mold the vanka, ho get tans to Polonaise, mit the charlatanka. Yo, 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 Shana Mabel, lonely baden fillin' in Odessa. Yo, 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 Sissy Mabel, lonely baden fillin' in Odessa.
Oy vey, he said.
Well, I was going to say fresh fish, but somehow it came out in Yiddish.
Oh, Richard. Richard Bernard. Thank you. Right here on the Life Changes Show. What a pleasure. KlezmerLosAngeles.com is where you could learn more about Richard and his band/bands and what he's done, etc. I'm going to spell Klezmer for those of you who don't know. KLEZMER, KlezmerLosAngeles.com. What a pleasure, Richard. And
well, as Jackie Mason once said, this has been a real honor for you.
You know, it has actually. I know this is very special today. Also, because in the process of us reconnecting, you shared with me something that happened not long ago, and our show, we talked a lot about these kinds of things. Are you comfortable sharing, Richard?
Yeah, music is wonderful. If you grew up playing the kind of music I did that's kind of manic, then it's a natural release. And I lost my wife of 4 decades just 5 months ago. And, you know, I'm trying to figure out, after that long, I'm trying to figure out, who am I? You know, where am I in the universe? So it's learning to live with the grief, with the reality that, you know, I come home and say, honey, I'm home to an empty house. And, you know, they talk about the stages of grief, but what you don't know until it happens to you is that it doesn't hit you in a row. There's not 5 stages in a row. There's little pitchforks coming at you different points of your day when you're least expecting it. So different kinds of grief hit you at different times that you're not expecting it. And it's a painful adjustment. That's a bit of an understatement there. But you don't resist it. You wallow in it. Go ahead and wallow in it. To admit that it's happening. And you know, people ask me, how are you doing? And I say, I'm doing. So I'm doing.
Thank you, Richard, for doing and for what you've done. The list goes on of people you've worked with.
You remember Barbara Mandrell show? That's really something. It was on NBC for 2 seasons, and I wanted to renew it for a third. I was a guitar playing life-size puppet. So that's Truck Shackley was his name. And yeah, and then we went on a tour with the Mandrell sisters. Wow, you've got a hell of a memory there. You remember Chuck Shackley?
No, I studied your bio and I went in my memory banks. I'm like, who could he have been? And so I looked at everything, Hollywood Bowl Orchestra. I'm like, yeah. I wonder if I you know, the United Airlines commercial. My gosh, millions and millions and millions of people have seen you.
I conducted
the orchestra. Da 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 da.
When you get to when you get to conduct Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue, you know, and you're getting paid for it.
Very nice.
Not so bad. Cate Blanchett's got nothing on me.
I could have said, you know, Golden Girls, or you know,
oh, yeah. Elvis.
Gilmore Girls, or I could
both
have said so many.
Any
Indiana Jones
girls,
and the girls, Kingdom of the Crystal
girls,
Skull,
girls.
Iron Man. You know, I could, you know, but I said what I said, and
now you can't take it back.
And I'm glad, Barbara Mandrell. So
King of Klezmer
and King of Klezmer,
not like Charlemagne who brought the Jews. Charlemagne brought the Jews to Europe from Baghdad in the 8th century. They called him the King of all Franks. And then there was another guy named Budweiser who was the King of all beers. And then there was Oscar Mayer. He wanted to be King of all Franks.
Oh, you're funny. You're funny. So we've got another song we're going to get to hear before the end of this show. And please tell us, this is pre-recorded. Actually, is this your band?
These are the same guys. Yeah, this is
the Oystars.
It didn't come out under the name Oystars, but it's all the same players. And it's arranged. The arrangement was written not by me, but by our clarinetist, who is from Kiev, Ukraine, Zinovy Goro. He wrote the arrangement, and I'm playing a tenor banjo on it. It's really cute when the banjo solo comes, because the banjo was used in American klezmer bands because it was loud enough to compete with the horns, and then from America it went to the European klezmer bands, and that's how they wound up using klezmer banjo.
Now, you and I haven't talked about this, but I'm going to take a guess at how this is said, and obviously you're going to correct me if I say it wrong, but is it supersonic Serbaslovic?
Serbaslovic.
Oh, I could have done it that way. I thought I was... Is that really how it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Serbaslovic. Serbaslovic.
All right, well, here's supersonic.
When we do it, it's supersonic.
Okay. Supersonic
Serbaslovic. It's sonic because it makes a sound.
Okay, here. So, what was the band if it wasn't Oystars?
And we were at the. That was when we were doing the pit orchestra for Schlemiel the First, which was a klezmer musical that we did at the Geffen Playhouse in Westwood.
Okay. Oh wow. So, okay.
Yeah, we were in the pit, and then we did this at that point.
Very nice. Recording. Well, here's supersonic Serbaslonic Richard Bernard.
Expialidocious, even though the sound of it is something quite atrocious.
Pre-recorded, here it is. Thank you. fun is that?
Molto grazie, molto grazie.
You know what? Again, correct me if I'm wrong, but
I've
danced a couple of horas in my life. Is this something I could have danced to?
You weren't dancing? Of course you're supposed to dance. Dance music.
Well, it feels like dance music, but a lot of klezmer music does feel like dance music to me. Is that?
Well, once again, you're reminding me of my days as a teenager playing psychedelic music in Northwest Georgia, and we would play a song, and they would say, play something we could dance to, because we were playing heavy-duty psychedelic music, and then we would play Vanilla Fudge's version of You Keep Me Hanging On, and they would say they couldn't dance to it. So our answer was, if you can't dance to the fudge, you don't know how to dance.
Okay.
So, yes, you're supposed to dance to all music.
Oh, okay. Well,
Foot loose.
Richard, what a pleasure it was to connect with you tonight and share you and your music with our audience. Richard Bernard, and again, klezmerlosangeles.com. Thank you for staying active and sharing your music throughout all of this. And I trust for many, many years to come.
That's what's keeping me going.
God bless. Thank you, Richard. And with that, after a big thank you once again to Richard Bernard. Did I say Richard? Sorry. Thank you, Richard.
Well, you had Richmond on earlier, so it's very confusing.
Thank you. You're absolutely right.
I don't know if you put us together on purpose, but with the grief, it was absolutely serendipitous.
Can I tell you?
Can I stop you from telling me?
No, I think now that you said that, I'll have to share. For the first time that I know of in 701 shows, I made a mistake. We actually had another performance guest booked for this date. And so when I reached out for you...
The bottom of the barrel.
No. When I reached out to you and I was excited about connecting and I offered this date and you said yes, and then I realized afterwards that we already had a performance guest, and that's never happened to my recollection before. And so I said, there must be a reason. And I apologized to the other performance guests saying, I'm sorry, can we find you another date? My mistake. And I left you in the slot. And of course, you would have said, okay, it's all right. You know, you would have understood. But for some reason, I thought, no, he has. And I didn't know about the passing of your wife. I didn't know. And so I just said, there's a reason, and it's beyond my control, because we know I don't make mistakes. So, okay. All right. Now we're getting silly. So with that, yes, I am so glad you were on today. I'm grateful to our performance guest who was going to be on, who will be graciously on in the future. And I'm glad we've reconnected. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you had canceled me, it would have been okay, because frankly, I have a lot of very important television to watch.
Of course, and to be on. may that happen sooner than later again. So much fun, so many blessings to you. God bless. And we thank our guest as well, David Richmond, for bringing all that he brought to the Life Changes show. That is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Lejeune, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, as surely all of ours did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at the Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.